Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is On Air Daily News for Tuesday, October 25th, 2022. I'm Naima Latif. And in the news today, October is harvest time for many farmers across the North American continent and many other places around the world. Growing food and the ability to feed one's community and to have control of the land where one lives continues to be a political issue that is oftentimes affected by racial division, particularly in the United States of America. The 32nd Annual National Black Farmers Association Conference is about to get underway. It will be held November 4th and 5th, 2022, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., at The Mill at 520 South Railroad Boulevard in Macomb, Mississippi. You can call 202-858-7997 to register. And again, that's 202-858-7997 to register. And for more information, you can contact Dr. John W. Boyd, Jr., founder and president of the National Black Farmers Association, at nbfa.office@gmail.com. And that website address is www.blackfarmers.org. This conference is the 32nd annual National Black Farmers Conference. It's free registration, no cost to attend. And it is that Friday and Saturday, November 4th and 5th, at the Mill Event Venue, again, 520 South Railroad Boulevard, in Macomb, Mississippi. And this event is an interactive two-day event. Presentations will focus on providing information on agricultural programs and techniques in the areas of farm credit and financing, networking, communications, skills, legal and social services, farm management, teaching tools, international markets, and many more. Sessions will feature a variety of speakers, followed by an opportunity to interact one-on-one with presenters from the U.S. government, private companies, and nonprofit organizations. The theme for this 32nd annual NBFA conference is Reclaiming, Regaining, and Regenerating Our Farms. The National Black Farmers Association is a national organization that advocates for black, limited resource, and socially disadvantaged farmers. They are hosting the 32nd annual NBFA conference, and that is to be held November 4th through 5th, 2022, at The Mill in Macomb, Mississippi. Growing food is unfortunately a political issue, which translates into economic access to capital and the ability to acquire the necessary equipment and a host of other issues that were addressed at a recent panel discussion. A Black Farmers Town Hall meeting was recently held for those who are deeply affected by the politics of farming. This town hall meeting was held during the 23rd annual Creating Opportunity Conference hosted by the Rainbow Push Coalition. This virtual conference brought in speakers from across the country, and this two-day event, October 19th, 20th, and actually three-day event, and 21st, gave many an opportunity to discover new opportunities. In the panel discussion on farming held in day two of the conference, the Black Farmers Town Hall discussion answered the topic about historically underserved farmers of color and how do we improve the quality of life for farmers of color. This discussion was moderated by Bobby Wilson, who is of the Metro Urban Atlanta Farm. And we'll share a bit of the conversation. Some of the other panelists include Dwayne Goldman, PhD and Senior Advisor for Racial Equality of the USDA, Phyllis E. Turner, a Fulbright Scholar from Dakar, Senegal, and a retired veteran educator and pecan farmer. And we're going to hear some words from Olivia Richardson, who is of the Culinary Arts Department from Tri-City High School in East Point, Georgia, as we take a look at the process of preparing new farmers, teaching agricultural skills, and making resources available to purchase and secure land and to develop the land for the purpose of farming. How do we address the issues relating to feeding people and getting farmers out of that state of poverty, getting the nation out of states of struggle for food, and serving those food insecure places, many in the urban communities adjacent to the rural communities? How do we create a better partnership between the farmers and the city dwellers? And how do we make sure our food supply is safe and pure from experimentation and genetic modification, which is unhealthy? Many of these issues addressed by the Black farming community continue to be ongoing points of discussion as people seek to find better ways to feed themselves wherever they may live. So now let's share a few words from the recent Opportunity Conference and hear from Olivia Richardson from Urban Atlanta Farms.
Thank you. I want to thank you for inviting me and giving me this opportunity. I started agriculture without knowing that I was in agriculture. My family in South Georgia owns like an 800-acre farm, and I used to go as a kid for like family reunions and just to go see the family without actually knowing what agriculture was. I actually started in the culinary world as doing baking. I got my baking roots from my grandma, and I started doing cakes and baking and selling different baked treats to, like, my church family, people around the neighborhood, and that kind of got me interested into the food industry. So I started working with chefs, and I realized that the restaurant industry really wasn't the pathway that I wanted to go down, but I still wanted to do food. So when I went to Tri-City High School, we have pathways at our school, and I joined the culinary pathway and met Chef Cheryl Williams, who is the culinary instructor at Tri-City High School. And last December, we went on the Urban Farm Atlanta agriculture tour, and that's when it was like an eye-opener for me that I wanted to actually do agriculture. And we went to a meat factory I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but that was another eye-opener for me that I wanted to do inspections, because they have to have a certain kind of meat. They have to make sure that the place is sanitized, because you have to then transport that meat to different people and now to have it on your table to eat. So that got me interested into inspections. So I told my mom that I wanted to do agriculture. So we started looking up different internships that I can do, and that brought me to Ag Discovery down in Prairie View, A&M, and that was partnered up with the USDA. And that also gave me another pathway into inspection and with livestock and product management. So I think what was an eye-opener for me with agriculture is the involvement with the community, how every little thing is pretty much agriculture. You have farms, you have inspections, even when you go to the grocery store, that's still part of agriculture, because there's people behind the scenes that are putting the food on the shelves, people who are making the food, inspecting the food, transporting the food. And I think when it comes down to the community, as a kid like me, my neighborhood has like small little farms. Well, it's like a little garden, but that's like another way to get the kids interested into agriculture. A lot of kids think that, I thought that agriculture was just farming. I didn't know that livestock was part of it. I didn't know that inspections and all the other aspects behind agriculture was involved with it. So I know that having different outlets that are, like my sister was starting a community garden at our school to let kids have like it's like a way to express themselves, but also to just have a relaxation from what they're going through at home or what they're going through at school, just to find an outlet to just decompress and focus on nature.
Thank you so much.
Bobby Wilson.
Plant that we went to on that first agriculture jobs tour was one of Cargill's meatpacking plants down there. Can you talk a little bit about what you thought about the plant and what you saw and within that plant?
Yes, I can. So when we first went I wasn't expecting the scale level of where it was. I thought that it was going to be more machinery than actual people behind the scenes. I thought when we packaged the meat that it would just be the machines putting the meat on the tray and going through. But it was actually people looking at the cuts of the meat, making sure that the meat looks up to part, the marbling's up to part, the cuts are up to part, and for the meats that weren't up to part, instead of them just throwing it away, they would put it in a bin and take it and use it for different other cuts of meat. So when you have like the pot roast, the little cuts of those, they would use the parts of like the steaks that weren't the way they wanted it, they would use it for that. And I found that interesting how instead of throwing it away, they reused it and they recycled to make sure that they can get the most use out of the meats that they have. And I also like that they had cleanliness to it. So we had to wear these coats. We had to wear gloves, hair nets. We had to wear boots. We couldn't just go in with our regular shoes, because bacteria can come in from our shoes. So if I go outside and then just walk into where they're making the meat, there's a possibility that the meat can get contaminated. So I like the aspect that they were making sure that our safety in the food and our safety as a person was taken care of.
Yeah, and that was the one thing that I wanted you to kind of hit on, is the cleanness of that. And that and the smell, we think of meatpacking places as being a terrible smell, but it's totally different. Dr. Goldman.
Yeah, Mr. Wilson, I wanted to barge in if I could.
Dr. Dwayne Goldman.
You talked about your interest in agriculture starting with your culinary skills. And I want to confess, I'm a farmer. I have degrees in familiar with production agriculture. I picked peas and sold fresh market vegetables as a kid on our little family farm, so I'm very familiar with that part of it. But when I joined USDA and started looking at all the things that this department touches, I, like you, ma'am, had a steep learning curve on the so many things that USDA touches. And so when you talk about the meat and poultry processor, that's been a major investment of this department. And I'm happy to say that yesterday at the expo, I had a good conversation with Dr. Ralph Noble, a longtime friend of mine. And Fort Valley State is partnering with USDA in a major way to make sure that processing facilities reach small farmers in a more meaningful way. He shared with me some early results where already small ranchers are able to get more dollars per animal based on some things that they've been teaching. And we have been investing in enabling those processes to be more successful. And once again, I'm not saying this to brag on what the department is doing, because I'm still keenly aware of the fact that had these things been done equitably across the years, we wouldn't be in this situation. So what we really got to do is focus on doing those things that reaches our growers where they are, and using the full complexity of USDA in order to achieve this equity. So I look forward to seeing you in agriculture one day, wherever you may be, whether that be culinary or meat processing or whatever you decide to do. I can tell already, and I'll just say it, that you're going to be successful at what you're doing because you're well-spoken, you're smart. And I heard you say you spent some time on an 800-acre farm down here in South Georgia. That's good training, man.
And that was from the recent Opportunities Conference, the Black Farmers Town Hall meeting held in day two of the conference. And this was an opportunity for black farmers to take a look at many of the issues that are affecting the entire food production and distribution industry. Well, now we're going to go to the White House and join a live press conference as President Joe Biden discusses updated vaccination status and the general conditions regarding the COVID virus. Let's join the White House now.
Or grocery purchase next time at the same time you get the shot. Some are making it easy for you just to walk in and get your vaccine right away, including on nights and weekends. And others from the private sector are stepping up as well, including delivering COVID treatments right to people's homes for free. Now, what do you do if you think you have COVID? Well, please get tested so you can be treated. We mailed out hundreds of millions of free test kits earlier this year. We had to pause the program because, unfortunately, some of our friends in Congress failed to continue to fund the COVID response. But if you have already used up these free tests, that's okay. We've required health insurance companies to cover free at-home tests, 8 tests per person per month. Folks on Medicare and Medicaid can get free at-home tests as well. And we have made free testing widely available in communities. And then, if you test positive for COVID, get treated. We have amazing treatments available now. They can help stop COVID infections from turning into serious illness. We are the only large country in the world that made Paxlovid widely available for free. You can get it prescribed by your doctor or at thousands of test-to-treat sites or even from your local pharmacist. Pick it up for free at your pharmacy. It's a pill. It's easy. Paxlovid can save your life. It's worth it. And here's the bottom line. Virtually every COVID death in America is preventable. Virtually everyone. Almost everyone who will die from COVID this year will not be up to date on their shots, or they will not have taken Paxlovid when they got sick. We've made the vaccines free and available. We've made the tests free and available. We've made Paxlovid free and available. Please use them. Use them. And encourage your friends and loved ones and neighbors to use them as well. It can save a life. To employers, help your employees get vaccinated. Set up a vaccine clinic in your building. Give people time off to get it if necessary. Share good, clear information, just like you do for the flu shots, to school and college leaders. Help your communities get vaccinated this fall. Host on-site clinics before Thanksgiving. And to our friends in Congress, it's time to step up with much-needed COVID funding. Help us stay ahead of the virus and keep our communities going strong with free vaccines, free tests, and widely available treatments, as we've done so far. Some of our friends in Congress say we don't need COVID funding, or they say there's really no reason that the government should be paying for it. I strongly disagree. This is a global health emergency. If we really want to put COVID behind us, we have to keep up the fight together. We can't leave people to face it alone. Some members of Congress say they don't want to move beyond COVID, but they don't want to spend the money to do it. We can't have it both ways. The funding we seek is critical to continue the work to develop and purchase the most effective treatments and vaccines against COVID. It's important. It's important. Now I want to speak directly to those with special conditions. New variants may make some existing protections ineffective for the immunocompromised. Sadly, this means you may be at a special risk this winter. So I urge you to consult your doctor on the right steps to protect yourself. Take extra precautions. I also want to say this. As we enter this new moment in the battle against COVID, let's use it to start fresh as a country, to put all the old battles over COVID behind us, to put all the partisan politics aside. We've already lost over 1 million Americans to COVID. Over 1 million Americans to COVID. You know, we can do so much now to reduce the number of people who die from this terrible disease. We have the tools. We have the vaccines. We have the treatments. None of this is about politics. It's about your health, the health of your loved ones. Close to this. Over the past 20 months, my administration has left no stone unturned to make life-saving tools widely available and easily accessible. Now COVID cases are down by more than 80% from when I took office. COVID deaths are down nearly 90%. And now we're in the longest stretch since the virus emerged, when our hospitals are not overrun with severely ill COVID patients. That didn't just happen. It took a combination of incredibly effective vaccines, tests, and treatments to get us there. One of the biggest public health efforts ever undertaken in this country. But together, we did it. Now let's keep doing it. Let's keep going. This fall, get your COVID shot and get your flu shot. It's simple. It's easy. For most Americans, it's one of the COVID shots per year, once a year. It's going to be required. And it's the most important thing you can do. So thank you. And now I'll show you just how easy it is to get that shot. You're not giving me the shot.
Oh, I'm not.
All right.
So now President Biden is taking off his jacket, and a physician has come in. And he is about to have a vaccination administered there at the press conference. And the physician is rolling up her sleeves.
Reporters asked questions. To get Brittany
shot was
out.
And so far, we have not been meeting with much positive response. But we're not stopping.
Would you say that?
Russia as it relates to Ukraine. Do you believe that this is the beginning of a false flag operation? Is Russia preparing to deploy a dirty bomb itself or a nuclear weapon?
I spent a lot of time today talking about that. Let me just say, Russia would be making an incredibly serious mistake for it to use a tactical nuclear weapon. I'm not guaranteeing you that it's a false flag operation yet. We don't know. But it would be a serious, serious mistake.
As reporters are still hollering questions, President Joe Biden left the room, accompanied by the physician who administered the COVID shot. Among the questions that were answered while he was receiving the shot was questions about the WNBA basketball player Brittany Griner held by Russia for what was charged as an illegal possession of cannabis. And he stated that he is in communication with Russia and they are striving to address her release. And he also answered questions regarding the situation in the Ukraine and the threats of Russia for nuclear weapon use. He made a point to pause for just a second while the shot was being administered, but continued to talk as the needle was stuck in, as a demonstration, he said, of how simple it is to get the COVID vaccine. That was the point made today at the White House by President Joe Biden. The COVID crisis continues to be a topic of discussion in the medical community and in the holistic health community as other measures are being taken by those who have chosen not to take the COVID vaccine. This is an issue that is not necessarily sharply divided between political parties or religious groups, but many people of many different persuasions are on both sides of the issue of the COVID virus and its best treatment and elimination. We'll continue to keep you informed and keep you connected to your elected officials who are making decisions that can affect your life. That's all for today. Join us tomorrow again at 1 p.m. Central and 2 p.m. Eastern for on-air daily news. Go to www.blogtalkradio.com/onairdailynews, and you can hear our broadcast at onaireverywhere.com. Just go to the radio broadcast page. I'm Naima Latif. Continue to stay safe however best your intuition tells you. And make sure you enjoy the rest of your day.